Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, that's a big deal. And the Redskins, remember, played last year Thanksgiving, had that very exciting game at Dallas. Yeah.
Is there a worse thing to wish upon your enemies than having Thanksgiving dinner in the FedEx Field parking lot? I mean, that has got to be
the single worst experience
in the history of Western civilization. It's just awful. Awful.
Once again, Luke makes fans out of the people.
This is for the Landover, Maryland.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, plausibly live from an as-yet-undisclosed third-floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air with Gene McManus and Gary Broughton and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel will do the news. Ann Hornaday will be with us later. Friday shows for me, we don't do them all the time anymore, but Friday shows for me have always been more familial and less structured, and because Ann is on all the time, less sports based and all of that. And so I'm going to take the open of this show.
Less good.
Not less good.
Oh, okay, I thought that's where you were.
No, not less good. Actually, more fun for me on a lot of levels.
Better than
Monday shows, for example, are always sportsy, and I understand that.
Yeah, well,
the shows are actually good.
Oh, okay.
I think our shows are good.
So you like the show?
I do.
Well,
I like it Monday through Friday. I'm just trying to draw a distinction here between the Friday shows and the other shows, because it's been a while since I've done a Friday show.
Let's take this Friday off.
So
it's
this
not
is
going
your
well.
Friday show.
This is the Friday show. So, and I've totally lost my place, but I think I use the word familial, which leads me into the news of the day as far as this show is concerned, and it is about Leon Harris. And Leon has a job. Leon has a job.
We'd love
with
Leon.
Channel
well, two jobs
four.
Now. He had a job with this show.
Yes,
right. Yeah.
But he's going to be on,
job.
He's going to be on a regular basis on Channel 4, the news that I watch all the time, and this makes me very happy.
Me
he's
too.
Apparently going to anchor weekends.
That's right.
And produce pieces during the rest of the week.
Yeah, cover breaking news stories in the middle of the week.
And so we hope that Leon has a long and wonderful career at Channel 4.
Absolutely. Yes, we love Leon.
And he'll work with probably with our good friend Wendy, and he'll get to know Sheena.
Sheena Parveen.
Well, what I was going to say
on her trip up the ladder.
As far as the show is concerned, it introduces the possibility of the WRC4 room of Rieger and Harris.
Yes.
Yeah.
We could do that.
We love Leon. Couldn't be happier.
Okay. So that is part one of this. And part two is catching up on all the lovely things that have happened in the last few days. And one is the Zaro's Bakery people based in New York of Zaro's Family Bakery.
The Seeded Rye
that started in 1927.
Yes.
I have mentioned this a number of times that when I am in Penn Station, particularly in the morning, if I'm going back to Washington, D.C. on the train in the morning, I stop at Zaro's. And I get a seeded, sliced rye that I ask to be put in paper and the plastic on top of that. Because I think the paper prevents it from getting gummier, but
yeah.
I could be wrong.
Preserves it.
It could be the other way around, that if it was in plastic.
Yeah, that's how you like it.
Do you have a sense?
Well, I would assume that since they've been baking bread since 1927, they might know
more
better
than, I.
than you.
More than I.
I don't know about that.
So customer's always right.
I mentioned Zaro's.
How thick is the slice?
About a quarter of an inch, maybe half an inch thick. Yeah. Maybe that. Not really thick, but good. You know,
it's a good rye bread.
I love seeded rye bread.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, you know,
caraway
seeded
rye bread.
You say this all the time. When you say seeded rye, it strikes me as like when people say New York style pizza. Like rye bread is seeded. Unseeded rye is the alternative.
Okay.
Am I right, Gene? I mean, you're the food
I don't know that.
There's always been.
There's rye bread without caraway seeds.
Right. That's unseeded rye. But rye bread has seeds in it.
But some, yes. That you're probably right, but it's important to make that distinction because some people can't eat seeds.
Okay,
right. Yeah. All right. So I mentioned it, I guess, on PTI.
Diverticulitis.
And I mentioned it here on the show, and I got this card that says, "Thank you very much. It was such a thoughtful gesture. Thanks for the shout out, R. Zaro. R. Maybe Richie. Maybe Robert. I don't know.
Ricardo.
Maybe Rhonda.
Rita.
I don't know. Right. Anyway, along with that card." I got a big box of stuff, a big box of that, a couple of seeded ryes, a bunch of black and white cookies, and I texted Saliza yesterday. I said, when are you on next? Because I've got a bunch of black and white cookies for you. A challah, which is spectacular, that I've started
Tremendous.
To eat. And by starting to eat, I mean it's like a third left.
It's like the ice cream.
And some t-shirts.
A what?
A challah.
Is that what you do after the show every day?
Challah at your boy. Challah at your boy. So that was Van Pelt's great line.
Big win.
That's a Van Pelt line. Challah at your boy. Love the line.
Big win for me this morning when I received
Zorro's
t-shirt that bypassed Michael, went directly to me. Michael did not even get dibs. Big win for me. I felt good about that, especially as it came immediately in the wake of me insulting you and wishing you a speedy soon death.
Well, Gary, here's what you don't know. Like, you before you arrived, Nigel and I had already received a t-shirt.
Right. But my that's all right. I don't care you guys come in before me, but for me to get it before Michael, that's a big win.
I got Michael stuff from Augusta.
Like, he's like family for Tony.
Familial Friday here, thanks.
So anyway, the big box, there was a big box of hats and a big box of shirts, and we gave them out at the restaurant yesterday. I told Bob Harvey, who's the restaurant manager, to just give them to anybody there and save the breads for me. So I wanted to thank the people at Zorro's for that.
Shirts are very cool. Thank
they're
you.
Very
yeah,
nice.
They are. Yeah.
They're very nice.
They're chocolate
I didn't
gray.
Even keep one for myself. I didn't even do that because I'm selfless. People say that about me all the time. That Tony Kornheiser, he is selfless. So anyway.
Number one descriptor.
So I'm talking about the restaurant to which these things were delivered, I thought I would name it today.
Oh, Mitzi's. It's going to be Mitzi's.
Right. Mitzi's
so happy.
Got all the way to the finals. But then Mitzi's was beaten by a number one seed.
So is this really? This is it.
And
this
you
is
have
it.
Secured all Done? Your social yes. names,
trademarked everything.
Yes.
Okay. Websites taken care make sure. of.
So I'm going
the
to.
Pact
I'm going.
Has been signed.
I'm going to describe the process for this. And by the way, almost everyone who I speak to, including a kid last night when I was at the restaurant, who called it Shinebox, loves Shinebox. It's not Shinebox.
I just checked. Douches DC is still available, so you did not get the URL, apparently.
So we had a lot of trouble with five different people who have ownership shares in this getting a name that everybody
but none
liked.
Of them are opinionated.
Right.
Right.
Getting a name
no
that
alpha
everybody
males
liked.
There.
And with about a week ago, Alan, the socialite, just threw his hands up and says, I don't care.
Oh, that's a great name.
I don't care. How would he say that, Michael?
Tony, I don't care.
I don't care. So now I only had to work on some of the other people.
Right.
And
we know Maury doesn't care.
Maury doesn't care.
He doesn't know.
He does know. Maury has rejected virtually every name I sent in without proposing any names of his own.
Just no.
And I finally said to myself and then out loud, he hasn't even been here yet. I don't care about him. I'm just going to push this
two through. Down.
So, right. And then there's
this
Gary.
This is a good sign for this
there's Gary, there's me, there's Ronnie Bubas. Okay, so we've had a number of things, you know, business class, first class, the old bag and sheep.
Mitzi.
DC line, Mitzi's certainly a highly respected
bandwagon,
name.
Had some runner.
All of that stuff. And all the sports names. I reject all the sports names because I don't want it to be a sports bar.
Sunny in 75.
I don't mind if you come in there and you want to watch sports. That's why we have all of these televisions.
Right.
I just don't want the sports bar crowd. So, okay, because there's dining there and things like that.
So I have music when you make the actual announcement.
All in for chicken
there's no
wings.
No music.
You don't want it.
So I'm going to explain how we got to where we're getting to.
Okay.
So I thought that it has to have a story. It has to have a backstory. It has to have something, some reason to do it. And I thought originally I was trying to think of either broadcast names or newspaper names because I thought we would honor Maury's dad, Shirley Povich, broadcast names. Gary's done a lot of broadcast work. Maury obviously does broadcast work. I'm doing this now. And I started in newspapers. And the name that I originally had that I liked the most was Rewrite. I really liked the name. Maury said no. No. And I said, it's in honor of your dad. No, he just didn't like it. Okay. So now it's back to the drawing board, and there's pressure, time sensitivity to get a new name. We've got to get a new name.
I really hope I like this name.
Weeks ago, you won't, because it's not Mitzi. Weeks ago, Gary Williams had said in that coach speak, we're going to get together. We're going to have a name by
Damn
the end
it,
of the day. We're
going to
have a name.
Right.
Well, we didn't have a name. And Gary's
get
Gary
a seal
always,
here and a seal here. He's like coaching you up.
Every time we got to the subject of names, Gary would suggest something with the word friendship for Friendship Heights. No.
That is so un-Gary-like.
We're not going to have it.
So, Amity?
No, we didn't have Amity. And there were a lot of things that we had. And I was the one who, I mean, I tried harder and harder and harder to come up with names because Alan had given up. But we don't hear from Ronnie. Maury hates everything. And Gary was stuck on friendship.
At this point, you should give the name later in the show. This is such a great tease. No. Keep people tuned
I'm gonna
in.
Know. I'm going to finish this segment with it.
Third hour.
I'm going to know. I'm going to talk about it here. So I wanted, in order to have a good backstory, and the backstory on Rewrite was, of course, had to do with Shirley Povich. And so, but Maury didn't want, for whatever reason.
But there's a tie-in to redoing the
that show. All of us, we could have had it named after ourselves. I will tell you that I've, and Michael knows this, I have always thought that either Maury's or Gary's would have been great names. Absolutely great names. Masculine-sounding names. In the case of Maury's, there's the famous thing at Yale University, the Whiffen Poofs, and that was the bar that they all went to, although it was spelled differently than we would have spelled it. And Gary's is a strong, solid name. And Gary didn't particularly want that, and Maury didn't want Maury's. And then they said, what about Tony's? And I said, well, Tony's is going to sound like an Italian restaurant. And that's not what we're serving. We're a bar. We're a bar first. We are a neighborhood joint.
I think
that's
Mitzi's is a really strong
name. Mitzi's is a very strong name.
That's
a
great idea.
It might finish number two. Might be that high.
You can keep talking it up if you want. So in order, then Michael and I were talking about this the other day, and we were trying to get the CH sound from Chadwick's and Chad's that we could continue. So if you do a backstory, you say, no, that's not a C, that's a different, that's a ch sound, not a ch sound. And we wanted to get, it's like Chris is different than Chadwick's, you know, right. It's CR. Right. It's a different thing.
Ooh, Champions, right?
Champions has already been
Cheers.
Done.
Cheers. Right. Oh, no.
Cheers. Well, the important thing is that's what we really want it to be, is Cheers, but you can't take that.
Chuds?
Name. No, we hadn't thought about that. So we got to this thing, and we had told we wanted a good, strong, two-syllable name, right, Michael? Two-syllable name. We
Correct.
Thought that was strong. So we had talked about Chessies, which would be named for the dog, and which we could pawn off as the Chesapeake Bay, which is right near here, Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. Beautiful dogs.
Mm-hmm. Official
beautiful
dog of Maryland.
Beautiful. So we thought about that. And then Chesters, because Michael Ooh. And I both like Chesters.
Yeah.
So I tried these things out on a couple of people at PTI, and some like Chessies and some like Chesters. Nobody's dead soul
no
on one's
gonna
these
tell
things.
No one at PTI is gonna tell you they don't like it. Well, they're afraid of you.
It's a so then, brilliant idea.
Then
that's
I,
great, boss. Lead with it.
So it's interesting because going back to Rewrite for a second, the single most famous line in all things written about newspapers, mm-hmm. in all newspaper movies, in all newspaper plays, in all newspaper overviews, the single most quoted and greatest line is this. Cut the chatter, sweetheart, and get me Rewrite. And everybody knows what that is who's ever worked at a newspaper, in a decreasing population as time goes on. And that's why I thought a Rewrite. And then I thought, what about chatter? And I said, ooh, I like chatter. And Michael liked chatter. And I said it to Alan, and Alan said, chatters. And I said, no, not chatters, chatter. And Alan said, well, I would just say chatters. And I said, okay, Alan, you're my one true friend. You could say chatters. And then Maury said chatters. And I said, no, chatter. And here would be the difference. Chatters is who we are. And chatter is what we do. I wanted to tie in the notion of the podcast studio where we would sit and we would chat. I wanted to make it sort of like Cheers, where people sit around and they chat. And I was running out of time and patience. And somebody was whispering in my ear, Mitzi's. Mitzi's.
Schmitzi's.
So it's chatter.
I like it.
It's chatter.
Yeah, I do too.
It's what we do, not who we are. It's chatter. And I do.
I honestly like it.
It's the singular of it. I like much more. It has nuance. It has history. It has nuance. And it is a CH for the third time. So it has continuity.
I would also point out that.
That's what it is.
That
chatter.
Chatters was a horrible sports bar in the Holiday Inn in Bethesda 25 years ago. I just now remember.
Okay.
But
so,
Chatter is awesome.
Why.
I like it. It's what you do. It's derivative of Chadwick's a little bit, so there's a time, or not derivative, but you know.
Yeah,
you
no, got, it's linear.
It's
linear.
It's on the spectrum.
Right.
And I think it's a good name.
And
it's on the spectrum.
I dig it.
It's contemporary, which Rewrite is not.
Yes.
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 Good
because
one.
You're saying, nobody does Rewrite anymore.
Right.
But again, cut the chatter, sweetheart. Is now sweetheart was another name I thought of. So it's chatter. So last night I'm at dinner at Chatter, because that's what we're calling it from now on. Right. And by the way, I had the Wiener Schnitzel. That was great. Wow. I swear to you, I never thought it would be,
now,
and it was really great.
That seems retro.
It was great. It was retro night. It was retro night last night. There was the old pot roast. Last night was retro night.
That makes sense.
And so I say it's going to be chatter, and Carol looks at me and she says, well, that was my idea. I said, that was your idea. I remember you saying things like center court and stuff like that, sort of sports things. And she said, no, I said chatter, and you didn't like it. And I said, I can't believe I wouldn't have liked it. And so I texted you, and I asked you, did you remember?
I don't remember, but I will defer to Mom on this one.
Yeah.
Well played, sir.
That is so well played.
Would you believe he's only been married a couple of years, this kid? He's a smart kid.
If it got in my head that way, that's fine. That's fine. But it was in my head, and I do like it. And I was able, not only was I able to, I was able to persuade Maury in texting that why chatter was better than chatters. And what I was going to do is this. I was going to announce it today anyway, and even if it was chatters, I wasn't going to say that. I was just going to say chatter. And then if the sign showed up as chatters, okay.
I just love that it ends in
really
an ER.
I didn't really care about that.
I know you can't say this on the air, but how high on the list was this possible name?
No, I can't. Oh. But for it's people looking
syllables.
At news,
unfortunately, that's three syllables.
And News Channel 8.
And two words.
You can see that. So that's what it is.
That's great.
It's chatter.
I'm happy for you that you guys agreed upon something that you're happy
And that studio, I hope and trust, and perhaps I shouldn't trust, I should just say I hope, but I say that studio opens on Monday, May 1st.
Attaboy.
That's where we're going to be,
that's
starting Monday,
attitude.
May 1st.
Yes.
And we're going to be open for breakfast. If anybody wants to come by on the corner of Wisconsin and Jennifer, right inside the district line in Washington, D.C., the capital of the United States of America, you can come by Monday.
Come watch us chatter at Chatter.
Well, see what I did there?
We'll leave a mic on for you.
And is it fair to say that May 1st show will begin with, we are coming to you not from, and then you will give the name of this currently undisclosed location?
Yes.
All right.
I will do that. And I hope we're in there. We looked at the table yesterday, the broadcast table, made a couple of adjustments to it, where I would sit. I will explain this. Once we get in there, I will explain why I'm sitting where I'm sitting for those of you who watch.
Is it like up
channel.
On a throne?
No.
Are you like going to be higher than
it's
us?
It's a dais, raised dais.
No. But because I've known Gene for so long and love Gene so much, somewhere in there will be written the word Mitzi's.
Yes.
And it'll be like a treasure hunt for people.
That would be nice.
On one of the bricks.
Plaque. Maybe you could have like Mitzi's. A Mitzi's. Yeah.
This could have been Mitzi's.
Or put something on the menu for her, like a Mitzi's candied bacon appetizer or something.
Yeah.
So a bacon wrap bacon.
Chatter, you're the one. I don't care about them.
I was so afraid I was going to hate it, and I was going to have to sit here and say, after that big buildup, I was going to have to sit here and say, I hate it. Because of course I would tell you, but I don't hate it. I really like it.
Yeah. It's the marriage of the podcast studio to the name. And so I'm happy with that.
It makes sense. Thank God she came up with it.
Yeah. So we'll take a break. And when we return, Ann Hornaday will join us with some movie reviews. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's the Harry's ad. We're working on getting a Harry's razor for Luke. Because, Luke is shy and can't get it on his own.
Yeah, he really needs to come out of his
show.
We're
going to work on that because everybody else seems to have one here, including Gene's husband, David, who has
loves
one,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
And loves it. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who are fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, and so they bought their own blade factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. It's just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you will pay at the drugstore. Harry's is so confident you will love their blades, they're going to give you their trial set for free. All you have to do is cover $3 for shipping. And the free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle. Mine is orange, as people know. 5 precision-engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. And that's a $13 value for you to try. So stop messing around. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 value for free. Just cover the shipping. To get your free trial set, including a razor handle, a 5-blade cartridge, and the shaving gel, go to harrys.com/TonyK right now. That is harrys.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes from Hank. who apparently needs no last name.
Like Sting.
Hank says, we heard Tony say the word worm burner on the show yesterday, or 2 days ago, because it refers to every six iron I've ever hit on the ground. And it occurred to us that you guys should probably know there's a band by the same name. My name is Hank. I'm the singer, lyricist, and principal songwriter in Worm Burner. We are Brooklyn-based. We have released 3 acclaimed LPs and numerous EPs, singles, etc. We've opened for the Violent Femmes, The War on Drugs, Old 97s, The Walkman, Cracker, Camper Von Beethoven, Cracker, and many others. Check us out on Spotify or the Apple Music Store. Our songs are very lyrical, he says, as the lyricist. But I've also attached one of our songs with the lyrics stripped out, which is probably this song.
Yes.
Okay.
And what I told him is that we'll send some back with the lyrics. We actually like to hear the words sometimes.
Yeah. They're actually accomplished
with some of those. I feel really old that I knew none of those bands.
I've heard of the Violent Femmes.
No.
I've heard of them. I've not heard them. Speaking about Violent Femmes, Ann Hornaday joins us now.
Boom.
And Ann's got a whole bunch of things out there for this week. And the one we're going to start with, and I know nothing about any of these. Well, I take that back. I heard one word about the third movie, Lost City of Z, but before I get to that, the first one is called Unforgettable. All I know is that Katherine Heigl is in it, and it's apparently about a jealous ex-wife story. Here's the question I have. Why isn't she a star?
Mm.
I mean, didn't it look like she was a breakout star? She did Knocked Up, right? It look like she was going to become why isn't she a star?
I don't know. I think, she was all positioned. She did a whole string of rom-coms, so she was going to sort of be her generation's Meg Ryan and Julia Roberts. She was sort of following in those footsteps.
Yeah.
And they weren't very good movies, for one thing. I mean, they didn't, they weren't classics on a par with A Pretty Woman or Harry Met Sally.
Those
they
are
were
great
actually
movies.
Right. Yeah. None of the movies that Katherine Heigl did.
Oh, that's how it's pronounced, Heigl, not Heigl.
I don't
even
know.
Okay.
You know me.
Yeah.
If there's a correct pronunciation, I will go 180 degrees opposite of that pronunciation. And I think she's been outspoken about her work and about her dissatisfaction with various, she came out against Knocked, she kind of backtracked on Knocked Up, and I don't think that endeared her to her colleagues.
She did a big diva move on Grey's Anatomy.
I can't even remember what that was. Yeah.
She was up for an Emmy, and she said, I don't know why I'm nominated for this. The writing on this show is terrible.
That's it. Yeah. So when you do stuff like that, and she kind of did the same thing to the Knocked Up people.
And I must have been good.
Never a good idea.
Because you should
never
have seen
a good idea.
Yeah.
So, and this is a movie about violent femmes. So your segue was completely... Was completely
blind,
on point.
Blind
spurned wife or something, and
what was that?
Spurned wife or something? This one,
a spurned wife.
Spurned.
I thought you said third wife. Spurned wife. Yes, ex-wife, psychotic ex-wife, played by.
But we've
Catherine.
All had those.
We can all. Yeah,
some of us are working on it. So.
Kind of doing, just sort of doing the boiling bunny routine on the new. Yeah. Lady, played by Rosario Dawson, and it's just, it's really interesting. I don't know, we have not really talked about Big Little Lies, have we? Have we?
No, that's an HBO series.
Oh,
I've not seen it.
I've seen it.
All right, then you'll know what I'm talking about, Jeannie. It's a very similar setup to the Reese Witherspoon, Zoe Kravitz scenario, in terms of jealousy and insecurity and kind of, feeling like somebody else has taken your life and taken the best, and that Big Little Lies was so good. It was just so well written and so well acted and just so beautifully produced.
Agreed.
When they trot something like this out that is just so, it's retrograde, not only politically in terms of the anti-feminism, toxic, female, intragender just these really retrograde notions of female competition. It just looks like it's been beamed from another era. You're just sitting there going like, are you kidding me? They're still making things like this? And it even kind of harkens back to a different age of filmmaking. Like, we just don't have room for these things anymore. These movies that just seem to get made because famous people agree to do them. It just has all these earmarks of something that just shouldn't be, I don't know, I feel like we've vaunted past this by now.
So you didn't like this movie.
So Unforgettable
like
is
it.
Not.
It's not Unforgettable.
Eggs. exactly as I said in the piece today, it's going to disappear from theaters faster than you can say oxymoronic title.
Okay. Okay, good.
Boom.
So the next one is Free Fire. This is Brie Larson,
yeah,
won an Academy Award last year, and to my knowledge hasn't been in anything else. And it's described as an action comedy.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's and she was in Kong Skull Island.
Well, that's not one that I would see.
Which makes this the second movie this year that she's in that has a little needle drop of John Fogerty singing Run Through the Jungle. A little FYI.
Okay. All right.
And this is by this guy named Ben Wheatley, who's a British film director who is a very, very gifted filmmaker. He did a movie last year called High Rise with Tom Hiddleston that was based on an the Ballard, you know, the sci-fi author Ballard.
I don't know. I know Greg Ballard. He was a three for the bullets. He was a pretty good shooter.
See, this is why, you know, we get on here and it's just like we're just talking past each other. Anyway, he's a very gifted filmmaker, and he especially loves action and violence and gunplay, kind of kinetic, he's very much in the tradition of Tarantino to the point this is almost like Hateful Eight, reconstituted in a 70s era warehouse where a group of IRA gun runners are purchasing weapons from a South African dealer. And it's kind of this one room, things go awry, of course, and it turns into this kind of real time, one room, you know, fight to the finish about who will survive.
So she's like still stuck in one room?
One big room. It's a warehouse.
Didn't she win an Academy Award for being stuck in one room?
Oh, you're so right. Why didn't I think of that?
Oh. Well, I don't know.
No spoilers here, but, you know, technically it wasn't one room.
Okay. And this is a comedy?
Yeah, there's a lot of, Armie Hammer is in it, Cillian Murphy, Charlton Copley plays the arms dealer. A really great cast. And there's a lot of badinage, a word that's actually used in the movie.
Badinage,
a lot of banter, a lot of verbal interplay. It's very glib. I thought that it wore out. The novelty wears off, and the glibness. You know, it's one of these movies. It's very Tarantino-esque, where the violence is cartoonish and consequence-free. And I think.
Yeah, you don't like
that. Brand, that's the thing that bugs me the most. I just think it's. It's cynical and it's wrong, and I just, in my, you know, waning years in this business, it bugs me more and more. So it's a little piece of fun. It's quick. It's like I said, it's very well made, and for people who enjoy that kind of thing, I think they'll get a bang out of it.
A little bit fresh. Sounds a little fresh.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, well, it also sounds like the Tarantino movie with, you know, Mr. Pink. And,
Very much. And to me, it was more like Hateful Eight in terms of that one room thing, you know, and very similar in terms of sensibility. So I kind of felt like I'd seen it before.
You mentioned that it was quick.
Sorry,
I had this conversation with my attorney, Jared, the other day, and we were talking about, he mentioned a movie that he liked, called The Good Shepherd from about 10 years ago with Matt Damon and the CIA.
I love that.
And I said, I loved that movie.
That was a good movie,
and,
wasn't it?
Right. And he said, I wonder why that wasn't a hit. And I said, the only thing I can think of, Jared, is that it went on for about 3 hours.
It was long.
And
it
was just too long.
It was subtle, that movie.
It's a great movie.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. So anyway.
I didn't review it, but I watched it because I interviewed De Niro when he received a Kennedy Center honor. And I'm like, oh, I need to watch it. And I was like, wow, that was a really good movie. You did a good job.
Yes, it's really good. All right, the next movie, and this is the one that I heard one line about, and I don't know who told me this, but it was The Lost City of Z.
Oh.
And I said, well, that's got to be garbage. And the person said to me, no, this is really good.
This is a wonderful movie.
This is really good.
Yeah, I want to see this.
So
this is a wonderful movie. It's based on the book by David Graham, who's a great, great nonfiction writer. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read the book, but it's on my list.
That's okay.
But it's about this British explorer in the early 20th century who, first under the auspices of the Royal Geographic Society, and then later on his own, explores South America and is convinced that there's a lost civilization, that there are the remnants of a lost civilization in the jungle, in the Amazonian jungle, that he's determined to find.
And John Fogerty doesn't sing Let's Run Through the Jungle in this one?
They missed their chance.
Okay.
They missed their chance. No, but it's been done by a filmmaker named James Gray, who's done consistently wonderful work. I mean, since his first movie, a little movie called Little Odessa, he did The Yards, which features my favorite fight. My favorite fight between two characters, because it's so realistic, and it's not, you know, like they don't use celery stalks to do the cracks. It's like you can hear the dull punches.
Yeah.
And it's kind of awkward and kind of stupid and quiet, the way a lot of fistfights are. Anyway, he did Two Lovers with Joaquin Phoenix and Gwyneth Paltrow, which was a little gem. And then he did a movie a few years ago called The Immigrant, which was a period piece that I thought had some structural issues. But clearly, this is a filmmaker who is unlike the Ben Wheatleys of the world. Not that we don't have room for everything, because we do. But he really, James Gray, is really dedicated to kind of classical filmmaking. Really in that Good Shepherd tradition that you and I were just talking
yeah.
about. He likes to tell a story and to tell it well and to not really put a lot of spin on the ball and do a lot of, you know, he doesn't distract you with fancy camera work, although there are visual images in this movie and visual feints that are absolutely exquisite. So he tells the story of this guy over a great period of time. We get, you know, it gets into World War One. It gets into more than one journey to the jungle. So you have to settle in. I mean, the movie isn't long, but it's a sprawling story. It's very much in that, you know, sort of Lawrence of Arabia tradition. But it's really beautiful, and Charlie Hunnam plays the lead.
Don't know who that is.
I guess he was in Sons of Anarchy. Was that his big?
Yeah, I don't watch that show. I don't watch Sons of Anarchy.
But you're sitting there thinking, wow, that was like a young Brad Pitt, and then you realize, oh, Brad Pitt produced this movie and was at one point slated to star. So it's kind of funny that they picked an actor.
Brad
so
Pitt
like
produces a lot of movies.
And they're so good.
And they're good.
Yeah.
His stuff is good.
This is so interesting to watch, this plan. His company's called Plan B, and it's at the point now where if you see the words Plan B, but it's become a real brand for quality. I mean, that sounds like such a, you know, corny line. But this is a beautiful, beautiful movie. And it's like for people who complain that they don't make them like they used to, it's like, yes, they do. This is one. Please go see it
okay.
and support
okay.
it.
Oh, that's wonderful to know.
It's terrific. It's really terrific.
Okay, and then you were going to, I don't get Netflix. I'm the only person in the world. Because I don't get it because I don't even watch what I want to watch on regular TV.
I hear what you're saying.
I'm never going to watch it, but it's something called Tramps that you wanted to talk about?
Wonderful little movie. I saw it last year at Toronto by a young filmmaker named Adam Leon, who did a neat debut movie a few years ago called Gimme the Loot. It had a kind of crackling, urban, Woody Allen-ish, whimsical energy, and this is very much in that tradition. It's about two young people who are kind of plunged into the middle of this caper that they don't quite understand. And they, again, this is a very swift little movie. It's delightful. It's funny. It's romantic. It's kind of It Happened One Night, you know. It's in that vein.
Oh.
So there's a bit of a screwball comedy element to it. Sweet and incredibly well-filmed and well-written. And it went straight to Netflix, and I actually talked to Adam about that. And I talked to a number, and there have been a number of good movies this year. I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore by Megan Blair with Melanie Lynskey also went straight to Netflix after being an opening night film at Sundance. And these guys, you would think it would be kind of like, oh, rats, I didn't get my theatrical opening. And it's like, no, actually, they're totally okay with it. Because of Netflix, and Amazon does it too, the way that they match movies with their subscribers and let their subscribers know about stuff they might like, these movies are really finding an audience. And the filmmakers are quite happy about it. So it's an interesting kind of change in the way things are being done.
That, Tony, reminds me of what Pablo Torre said to you when he was on the show a couple weeks ago about not caring that his work isn't in print and is going straight to online. I mean, very, very similar.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I feel like this generation, you know, there was a time when they still wanted a little bit of a theatrical opening just to say they had it, you know, or to be able to see their movie on the big screen. And I feel like now this generation isn't as attached to that as previous ones. And it's kind of like they just really want people to see their work and respond. And they want to make work. And it's the Amazons and Netflixes that are actually giving these guys the means to do that. So it's just a new, you know, and then when you compare it to something like an Unforgettable, which looks so kind of lumbering and like a waste of, you know, kind of almost a waste of space in terms of the brick and mortar theater, I just feel like there's a change afoot, and I'm hoping that these movies will, you know, retain their viability going forward.
Do you want to plug the DC Film Festival?
Yeah, it's underway. They have some really, really good movies this year. They have like one of the big hits out of Sundance called Patty Cakes is playing tomorrow. A bunch of really wonderful documentaries, a great Egyptian film that I saw at Cannes last year called Clash. I think it's playing today or tomorrow.
Like how great, like top five Egyptian films of all time? Or?
Well, I mean, it's really good. It's kind of a one-room exercise. It's a bunch of people who have been detained after a protest march, and they're all in the same truck, police truck. And so they're all from different backgrounds and political and religious sensibilities, and it's kind of, you know, it's like Life, you know, the Hitchcock movie Life, you know, it's
like
kind
it
of
is, come is it as good as
it's like they'll come from away.
Yeah, or Cairo on my mind,
oh,
which
see
is
that.
One of the great ones. That
anyway,
was
so yeah, there are a lot of really good stuff. Check it out.
And one appeal on behalf of the Littles, you mentioned that The Yards has your favorite film fight.
Yeah.
Maybe a little tweet of Anne Hornaday's top three or five cinema fight scenes. That'd be
okay.
Very interesting. Would love to see that.
And you said,
let me think about that.
You said something about they don't use broccoli.
Celery.
Rather.
Oh yeah,
Is that the sound effect that they use? Oh,
right. That, sometimes they would do that, right? Yeah, they would kind of crack a piece of celery for that cracking. Because it always bugs me when you always hear a bone breaking, even though they've been hitting. You know, they're hitting them in the abdomen or something. What I mean?
Is that fight with Mark Wahlberg?
Yes, it's Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, and did you see that?
And they were apparently actually really fighting. I mean, it was such an intense experience. But if you watch it, it's very, you know, it just does away with all those cliches.
Yeah, well, you're right, because a real fight, like, isn't a pretty
it's
thing.
Loud.
It's not
yeah,
choreographed.
Exactly. And it's kind of silly, and it's awkward.
Not
and
everybody fights like Sly Stallone.
I know we have to get out of here, I'm sorry, but selfishly, did you see Born in China, which Spike and Ike are on me to take them to? Did you see that, the Disney Earth Day schmaltzy thing that's
No, because I'll cry like a big baby.
Okay.
And it'll be very embarrassing, and it'll hurt my credibility.
Okay. We can't have
that. Simple. No, I think I had a competing screening that night.
We will talk to you next week. Thank you, Anne.
You betcha.
Anne Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with Nigel in News. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah.
Is Paul going to sing?
Yeah. Ringo on drums.
Boy, does this sound like 1964. This is from David Teeter in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who's a longtime internet radio little when he could listen to the online offline stuff and play Know Your Heads. Here are the Jet Beats, Grand Rapids, Michigan's own 60s British Invasion sound, playing a week at the Cavern Club soon. Also will be claiming Canadian status as not to get the unofficial TK salute. In critical commentary, and David Teeter writes, he's been fighting cancer for 3 years. You know, no special snowflake, he writes, more of a medical mystery. They have no idea how it started. But like many, your show is my daily, except for that vacation you took and told no one about. Recently, sons of bitches. Just kidding, we knew. And he writes, I get to spend time with my 70-year-old dad. Only took the cancer in 40 years for me to get closer. I even picked back up the clubs to play with him. I'm strengthened by the relationship you and Michael have, and it's great you have that with him. I feel so old now since I remember the proud dad moments in baseball. as you buried another dog. It's a wonderful email. It's a wonderful sound.
It is. And the Jet Beats, by the way, will be going to my old neck of the woods. They're going to be at the Caledonia Pub in Liverpool on May 13th and back the Latham Hall in Liverpool and the Cavern Pub. A couple of dates in Liverpool.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Thrown out of you can
hear. You can hear all this music at the end of this show in full. And Michael, if people want to send it, how do they?
They can send it to jingles@tonycornheisershow.com.
Okay. And also in terms of gear, because it's the end of the week, if people want to buy some gear.
Well, if they want to buy gear, they can go to shop.tonycornheisershow.com. The mugs and tumblers are selling quite well. I think we're going to do a reorder.
Okay.
And I think we are about to introduce a sale on some winter sweatshirts and some hats.
Fantastic. Wow. And if people want actually good clothing, what can they do?
Well, if you want good clothing, I would still steer you towards Johnny O. Where that promo code is still working. And I would ask that you look at some of the MLB official gear now that it's baseball season.
So, and we're big fans of Johnny O.
Yes.
I talked to Norby Williamson, my friend, who I played golf with a week and a half ago, and he said, you know, well, this Johnny O stuff's really nice. And I said, I'm going to send you some. Matter of fact, I got to get some for Jack Vardaman, but in a larger size than we have.
The great Jack Vardaman. Or is this a different guy?
So do you have news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. So the Cleveland Cavaliers on the road against the Indiana Pacers. It was in the Indianapolis, I'm sorry. And down 26 points in the second half. You think, all right, well, we'll be going on to the next game. They won't win this one.
Really?
They came back. LeBron James led the way, 41 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists.
28 in the second half, kids.
Two blocks. He scored or assisted on 73 points, the most in the playoff game of his career.
45 minutes played for him, another 45 minutes.
Which you can do in the playoffs because you don't go back-to-back.
Right.
Which you can do. Michael Wilbon yesterday predicted that Indiana would win this game because Wilbon loves Paul George. And Paul George,
who had an amazing game.
Yeah, he did. But he didn't win.
Correct.
Russell Westbrook had an amazing game the other night, and he didn't win.
Right.
And the moral of the story is you don't bet against LeBron James.
I just don't.
In the fourth quarter, neither Kyrie Irving nor Kevin Love played. They didn't even play. LeBron James took the game over. Wilbon said Indiana would win. They didn't win. Wilbon also said yesterday that Memphis would go to the line more often than San Antonio. And I said, no, they won't. No, they won't, even though the game's in Memphis. I said, yes, they will. Well, they beat the Spurs last night, but they didn't go to the line more or as much as the San Antonio Spurs. And that's because their coach, David Fizdale, because referees don't like it. When you rip referees,
right,
they don't like it. All referees are in the same fraternity, and it's not the fraternity of coaches. And even though Memphis was at home and went to the line more than they had before, they didn't go to the line as much as the Spurs because he's not Greg Popovich. David Fizdale is some guy waiting online for tickets to a movie. He's just a guy at this point. That's all he is.
Ain't going
to
rook us.
Now, he had a great line when he said, you're not going to rook me.
Right.
That was a great line.
But they rooked him.
But the referees said, really? Yeah. Really?
Take that for data.
Yeah.
By the way, LeBron James, his line last night, 41 points, 13 rebounds, 12 assists. 7 of 14, 50% from the line. I mean, he was right there for what could have been a 45.
He's not a good foul shooter. He's not a good foul shooter.
Well, he's better than 50%.
Yes, but he's not a good foul shooter in particular. Go ahead.
One other game last night, the Bucks beat the Raptors 104-77. They lead that series 2-1. The Nats. I was talking about this with
Jeannie. Let's talk about the Nats.
I was talking about Jeannie
before the
show. Talk about the
Orchid in the seventh.
Do you remember a time, it doesn't seem that long ago, when the Braves beat the Nats
every single time. And now the reverse is true.
And now the reverse is
true. Love that new stadium.
Yeah, it's really working out for him. Steven Strasburg was outstanding last night again.
You finish your line and then I'll go with mine.
And the Nats win 3-2.
Okay. So Steven Strasburg's line is outstanding.
April baseball.
It's innings.
70 degrees.
Six hits. Two runs, two earned. Okay, that's fine. And 10 strikeouts for the 30th time in his career.
I was surprised.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot.
30th time in his career, he's had a start that yielded 10 or more strikeouts. Now, did you watch the seventh inning, his last inning?
I did not watch this.
Well, first of all, I had a conversation last night on the phone with Ray Knight.
Oh.
Now, I think that I've said this publicly before. I think Ray Knight's great.
Yes.
In the pregame and the postgame, when he puts the bat in his hands and tells you what is going on. And by the way, those few times during the year when he does the color on the main games, often when they go to Cincinnati, because he played for so long in Cincinnati, he's great, Ray Knight.
Yes.
Ray Knight, not afraid to point out what you're watching. Not afraid to say people have made mistakes.
Right.
Right? Not afraid to do that. And I complimented Ray Knight. I really enjoyed talking to Ray Knight. I just bring that up. But in any case, in that seventh inning last night, Steven Strasburg was hit hard.
Oh, he was.
He didn't strike anybody out in the seventh inning last night. He had nothing left but fumes. Michael A. Taylor, with a man on first, makes a diving catch of a line drive that if it sinks away from him and goes by him, it's a 4-3 game the other way. It's an inside-the-park home run. In the last out of the inning, a guy hit the ball 7,000 miles an hour down the left field line that Anthony Rendon backhanded, and it got to him so quickly that he threw somebody out by 20 feet. I mean, those balls, did you watch, Michael?
I did. There were some great defensive plays, particularly in the outfield to support the pitcher.
Bryce had a great defensive play, too.
So Steven Strasburg, so he could not have pitched I don't think another batter.
You are going as far away from Ryan Zimmerman as you can.
No, Ryan Zimmerman. No, not because this is what I've written down.
Such a joy to see him hit.
Ryan Zimmerman hit the two-run homer off R.A. Dickey. And what I wrote down, that's the second game in a row that Ryan Zimmerman has hit a home run and had multiple RBI. He's batting .389. Ryan Zimmerman alone, if he reverses his season from last year, that alone makes the Nats World Series contenders, even with a shaky bullpen. Yeah. And now they've gone to now it's Sean Kelly. Now Blake Treinen's not getting in except with the word mop up for a while now, right?
I would agree. Then,
wasn't it great now that they've resolved that closer situation to just get that 1-2-3 ninth and close it out like Sean Kelly did?
No, one and two. Apparently.
I'm kidding.
Sean Kelly gave up a hit and then walked the guy.
With the walk, he did not shy away from his intended path, which is a strikeout approach.
He did not look, unlike Trine in the previous night, he did not look like his confidence was shattered. It was just a little more nerve-wracking than it had to be. But yeah, he got in there and got the job done. And some of them, you're going to close like that. Not all
I would just point out, and you know I'm a Red Sox fan, so I'm a little biased here, but if you're not watching Chris Sale pitch this year, you're missing out on something special.
You know, Kelleher and I were talking about Chris Sale yesterday. Kelleher is a Red Sox fan.
That's right,
too.
He is.
Sox.
Yes.
Chris Sale, until July, year after year after year after year, is one of the three best pitchers in baseball.
And then he fades?
But after, you know, he's never won 20. I mean, he started out like 9-0 or 11-1 in July, and then he doesn't win 20. Something happens, and I was saying to Matt, maybe the fact that he's 6'5 and 170 pounds has something to do with it. I mean, he's really thin. I think he gets fatigued by the end of the year because he's a great pitcher.
Wow, Tony, I didn't realize that until you said it. He is listed at 6'6, 172.
He doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah, but for right now,
he's great.
Who knows? I mean, it was like eight. He only has like one win.
Look at his first half statistics compared to his second half.
I don't know how to do that.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Get a stat, boy.
Yeah. Tiger Woods, under the knife again. Mm. This time it was successful surgery.
Yes, it was. That's great to hear.
Wasn't the last one?
Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Lower right back fusion surgery Wednesday in hopes of alleviating that ongoing pain that has plagued him in recent years. But he will be out for 6 months. He'll be out for all the majors, effectively ending his for the season this year.
He had no season this year.
Well, yeah.
He played in Dubai and was terrible.
Yes.
In a tournament with 17 people. And he finished 17th or 16th, something.
When you look at the timeline of like his last major win was
2008.
Yeah, and his last win at a tournament was like, I don't know.
No, he came back and won about four or five tournaments one year.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, he just didn't win majors.
Okay,
here's the deal with Tiger. First of all, his people lie to you all the time. They tell you there's nothing wrong that needs an operation. They deny there's even back spasms. And you say, well, he's down on his knees holding his back. What's that? Did he trip? You know, and so his representatives are always lying. And then when he does have an operation, it is always termed successful.
Yes.
This is his fourth back operation. He has had four knee surgeries. Each one successful. If they're that successful, why isn't he playing? Because they're not successful. And you can believe these lies if you want. You can believe his representatives if you want, but it's just stupid. I mean, believe your eyes. He can't play. He can't play. I don't know if he'll ever play. I don't think he's going to play the senior tour.
Oh, really?
I don't. I mean, he was such a great chance. I don't know. Maybe he will. Michael, is he ever going to play?
at this point, I don't think he really will ever compete again. With this latest surgery, you just imagine he's going to have no more pop into the swing. You know, interestingly enough, I think back to the Tiger Woods How I Play Golf book from, I think, 98, 97, right around then. And he told about his secret move, which is he tried to snap his lead knee backwards as hard as he could if he wanted to hit something a little bit extra. And I just think about the wear and tear in his body, and there's just – this is not a finesse game anymore. There are people who need finesse shots, and we all do, but you need to be able to swing your driver over 115 regularly, and I just I don't think he's going to be able to support that with the pieces of his body now.
I don't – I mean, we'd all love to see him play, but we are suffering under an illusion.
Who among us – and just speaking specifically to the listeners now that are actually getting older from day to day – who feels better when they wake up than 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago? You know, so throw on top of that multiple back surgeries.
Do you think he's got money left?
Yes. He just signed a big deal with Bridgestone Golf Balls. Okay. Yes. He can sell product. He's Tiger Woods. He can move product. I don't think you have to worry about that. I really don't.
Does he do like Greg Norman and design courses?
He started doing that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking now of the...
the Chicago course.
I'm thinking of the Tennyson poem. Though much is taken, much abides. And though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are.
What?
There's two ways to look at Tiger right now.
Oh, my God. One, you're raising the bar.
One is...
We're going to have to put him on at Mitzi's.
One is the hero looking back spoken at the conquests of his youth. And the other is a guy who's just completely out of touch and wants to go back out there and battle the young guys.
They're not afraid of him. And by the way, when Tiger came on tour, though there were some people who hit it past him, nobody as good as him hit it as far as he did. And now he's in the dust with these guys. Yeah. Right? They're 20. Dustin Johnson's 20 yards past him. Right? Got to be.
More than that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Tony, anyway. I got as far as last year on Chris Sale, who was 14-3 in the first half and 3-7 in the second.
There you go.
Don't step off that bus. Is that what's that thing? Step off that. What do kids say?
I don't know.
Don't step on me. Don't tread on me. Eat at Mitzi's.
Step away. Step down. Stand down.
There's a slogan.
Back off, Sam.
Yeah. To the NFL, Mr. Tony.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Oh, you don't want to do that?
No, okay. I'm tired of this now. We'll get to that in Old Guy. Old Guy's coming up. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Upside.com read. I found the best way for people out there to buy travel, Upside.com. Here's why everyone who uses them loves them. At Upside, you save money on travel and you get a free Amazon gift card worth $100, $200, even $300 every time. You get savings and a big gift card for free. And here's how they do it. Upside bundles your flights and hotels together for one low price. When you bundle, you save a lot of money, especially on business travel. So they give you an Amazon gift card. Your company saves money. You still keep all your miles. And right now, when you use my name, Tony, you're guaranteed a free $200 Amazon gift card your first time. That's pretty good. $200 worth of Amazon gift card. Pretty good. My name, Tony, gets you a guaranteed $200 Amazon gift card. How can you not do that? Upside. Save big on travel. Get a big gift card every time. Upside. UPSIDE. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. Minimum purchase applies. See the site for details.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Oh,
you know,
no,
it's every
this.
Year.
Why am I always here when this happens?
It's every year. This is Old Guy Radio. This is Snoopy versus the Red Baron. This is, thankfully, the defunct Royal Guardsman. This song is terrible.
I believe they're still touring.
Nigel, why don't you explain why we play this once a year?
Today is the anniversary of the death of the Red Baron, Baron Manfred von Richthofen, which I believe was also in the running. Weren't you going to call it von Richthofen's?
Well, that was ahead of Mitzi's at one point.
He died on this day in 1918, so, you know, 99 years ago. And this song by the Royal Guardsmen,
terrible,
as we like to say, is the definitive pop song about World War I aviation.
Yes, it is.
And a limited number of those.
You might be interested to know that when they wrote this, it was just a year after Charles Schulz first had the Snoopy fighting the Red Baron in the comic strips. They did not ask for permission, and so they just did it. And then Charles Schulz sued and won all the revenue from it. Then he said, but if you guys want to write songs in the future, including Snoopy, you're more than welcome to do that. So this is the lovely little song that is just horrible, and for some reason I like it. It's my great Achilles heel of music.
It's okay. We don't have to hear it again for another year. So last night, as I said, I was at Chatter last night, and there was a young man sitting alone in one of the booths towards the back of the dining area on the top right-hand side of the restaurant.
Was it Gary?
It was not Gary. It was not Gary. And I said hi, because when I go in there, I just sort of assume that people know who I am, and I want to make their evening a little bit nicer. Yeah. And I say, hey, how you doing? Is the food okay? And, you know, if they say it isn't, then I really don't have, other than,
can't
I'm
help
sorry.
You.
Get out.
Yeah, here's $5. Get out. So I don't do that, but they tend to be nice about that. And I saw this one kid, and he had earbuds in, and I just said, hi.
Kid, 20, you have to
mid-20s,
define.
Mid-20s, okay. 30s. Well, kid, at this point, 52. 55 is kid.
That's why
so
I asked for clarification.
Jeannie and I, 55 is a kid. So he's got earbuds in, and he looks up at me and says, I was just listening to the podcast today.
Oh
so I thought that was very, very nice.
Cool. That is nice.
So he introduced himself, and his name was Justin Cox. And he said to me, well, I will read you the letter. La Cheeseria to you. He had a letter for me. La Cheeseria to you, Mr. Tony. My name is Justin Cox. I'm a millennial little from Somerset, Kentucky. I'm up for the weekend and will be dining at the restaurant known as Chad, soon to be Shinebox, for the majority of my dinners here. I write to you to ask if you could autograph my copy of Pumping Irony for my father. He's been a fan of yours since the 90s, and I'm hoping to surprise him for Father's Day this year. You know?
So I hope he doesn't listen.
Well, I hope he's going to.
Spoiler alert.
You know what? It doesn't matter.
Right. Right.
It doesn't matter. I'm telling the story anyway. The father is going to be very, very happy.
Yes.
He said that I bought him Titleist Pro V. Balls personalized with the cheesery, and come on, man, what are we doing out here, man? There's nothing he would love more than an autograph, if this is possible. Could you address it to Ron Cox a second? And to aid in the autographing process, I've taken the advice of a famous journalist and left you a Big Ben, something everyone should have. You know, and then he doesn't want it to be mentioned on the podcast, but he loses on this, because
yeah.
right. I'm going to tell the story.
Yeah.
So I'm
first,
sitting
buddy.
There.
That's so nice.
I'm sitting there with Justin, and he's a school teacher. He's a teacher in a rather poor county, in southern Kentucky. He went to the University of Kentucky. He's a history teacher. And why is he here? Because one of his kids in a poor rural county of Kentucky in a public school qualified for the National Geographic Bee or something like
awesome.
That,
yeah.
or the National History Bee, whatever. And that kid is here with his mom. And I said, and Justin was done eating, I said, Justin, when you're done, come sit with us. And we chatted for a while. And he told me some fascinating things about his life. One is, he is 26. He has a younger brother, 13, and a younger sister, 4.
Ooh.
And I said, all in the same nuclear
same
family? Yeah. He said, yeah. So that's really, I mean, that's weird. And his wife is the reverse of that. She's the youngest of 3 by a wide margin, so that the in-laws are wildly different in age. Now, I found that very interesting, and we talked for a while. I mean, he was very, very nice. He knew that Michael had been a teacher, of course, and I wished him all the luck in the world. And I said, look, here's what you got to do. You got to make sure that the kid and the parents, they go to everything. Go to all the free things.
Yeah.
Go to everything in the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
One. Everything
absolutely.
You can go
natural
to.
History.
Go to all of it. Don't pay for a thing. Go, just go see it. Stand in front of the White House. Stand in front of the monuments, because it's free and it's your country. And he made a pilgrimage to what we now call Chatter. And I was very touched by that.
Very
I thought that
sweet.
Was really nice.
Very cool.
And I think, and Michael knows this, I think increasingly you find that, right? That people do that. This is on the stop now when they go to Washington.
It is part of the D.C. pilgrimage, and it's great because to the new name, you see these listeners reaching out and talking to each other, and it's creating this really cool ambiance.
So he says to me,
I think Chatter is the ultimate destination, isn't it, for the Desolation of Song bus tour for the Jingle Fest this year?
Yes,
I hope I'm not spoiling anything.
No, there is a lunch.
Yeah. That's Saturday, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's part of the pilgrimage.
Yes,
so,
it is.
You know?
So his dad, and this is when you feel really old, because he's talking about his dad, and he said, my dad wanted to become a sports writer because of you. He liked you that much. And he was a sports writer in a few places, and then that was the end of it. And, I mean, he wasn't – sports writers, they don't make any money. I mean, they just – you know, there's not a lot of money in it, and not even in big cities, but in smaller cities, there's hardly any money in it. But I was very pleased. I was very flattered by that. I've ruined the surprise, but that's okay.
No, it's
I've gone
right.
on and
it's
on
an
about
awesome
Justin Cox and his dad.
No.
So also, I wanted to just – can I tell a quick story?
Of course.
So I was on Monday – I flew, and people know I'm not the world's greatest flyer. I flew to Atlanta, Georgia, in order to go to Augusta and play. And I flew to Atlanta with my new best friend, Anthony Black, who works for Delta and who actually flies with me and sits next to me and talks to me. And this is very... What? What? You've done it. You did it from Oslo.
I did it, but I wasn't a paid employee of Delta.
By the way, I was your editor.
Underpaid employee. I don't know what he's making, but then he'd add a couple zeros if that's the gig.
I did it because it was the only way I was going to get you to Lillehammer.
So you've done this.
Okay.
So I flight is fine, and I love Anthony Black for all of these things. And then he says, before it, he said, would you like to go in a flight simulator? And I said,
ooh.
Well, I don't know. Well, is it scary? And he says, well, it doesn't have to be scary because you're not actually flying.
Not going to let you fly it.
It's like the Star Wars ride.
Well, he said, you can go in a flight simulator and you can fly it. I said, I don't know, but I think I'd like to try to go in the flight simulator. Well, Delta's big hub is Atlanta. Right. And they've got 30 flight simulators. And flight simulator, it just looks like a garage.
You're just stepping into a room, right?
That's a good idea for you. It's like immersion therapy, right?
Yes. So I went on a flight simulator of the newest plane that Delta has ordered, an Airbus 350. They don't have them in work yet, but I went with Captain Mark Duff, who's an instructor, on the 350. And this is a big Airbus plane. And I go into this cavernous room where it just looks like you sit down, there's a cockpit area, there's a couple of seats, you fit yourself in, and nothing goes on until they flip the switch, and then you're in the actual cockpit. And then all you can see around you is what you would see on the ground and then in the air.
It's like essentially like a wraparound screen, right?
I mean, yes.
You don't feel like you're looking at a TV. You feel like you're in a cockpit.
Yes, you do. And this is how people learn how to fly planes. How pilots learn, and pilots are always required to go back into this training all the time.
Yeah.
And real pilots are given testing circumstances, and they don't know what's going to happen, and their reaction is very important.
Oh,
I mean, the 99% of all flights are benign, but if something bad
if it's
a Charles Sullenberger situation, you want to know that the pilot is covered, that there's nothing that can happen that he has not been prepared for.
By the way, that's a big one, that A350 I'm looking at. It looks like nine seats across in economy.
It's intercontinental.
Yeah.
It's a long-haul carrier. And he says to me, well, would you like to fly like we're in Hawaii? I go, well, I've never been to Hawaii. We've been to Hawaii many, many times. He says, let's go to Hawaii. Let's start out in Hawaii.
Oh, and go past the waterfalls.
And the one thing I said was don't make it rock. Just don't make it.
I want to see land.
Let's keep it smooth. You can't see land in Hawaii.
No, I wouldn't think so.
You know, and he said, okay. And he said, would you like to fly? I said, no, I don't want to fly it. And so he put in things like, this is how many people in the plane, this is the weight of the plane in order to get liftoff and stuff like that.
Right. How drunk
and
I
he
am.
Said, we're gonna take off in Hawaii, you're gonna see Diamond Head. I mean, he'd been to Hawaii a million times.
Right.
He's flown all over the world, you know, 1,000 times, long haul
carriers.
Tony,
the stuff you see when you look out the window, is it computer generated or is it actual? Like, is it like it's visual?
It's not like green.
Like when you see Diamond Head, is it video of Diamond Head or
I can't tell you.
It's not like your nav system where it's clearly a graphic.
It looks like it might have been real.
Yeah.
It looks like the real thing.
Okay.
It's like
real thing. Because
I was saying, I don't like going over water.
So your eyes were open.
Hawaii, my eyes were open.
Beautiful water.
When the screen comes up all around you, it's breathtaking.
Immersive. Yeah.
Yes, it's breathtaking because you're in the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take off, you take off. Now, here's...
Do you feel when you take off?
Yes.
Do you feel the...
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
So you're in a plane.
You feel the lift, you feel the drag, all of that. He's explaining all these things to... What?
What's your anxiety level just on that
moment? A little bit, not nearly as much as it is in real life.
Okay.
Not
we already had a Xanax.
I mean, I didn't take any. I should have said to him, wait, I've got to take a pill. we were flying, we were talking. It was a little bit better. Once in my life before this, when I took the Fearful Flyer course at then US Air, the graduation exercise, which I didn't want to go to, was an actual flight. And I felt I could skip that, but I didn't. I went. I went to it, and we took off from National, and we went to Richmond, and we circled, and we came back. And we were actually up in the air. And what you were allowed to do on that special flight is not what you're allowed to do on regular flights. When we were encouraged to do this, go up into the cockpit and sit down and feel what it is like to fly the plane. And it is remarkably different when you are in that seat. You don't, the noise level is much less. And the visuals, the speed feels different. It feels very manageable. You don't feel like you're hurtling through the air. And it gives you great confidence, obviously, in the people who are flying the plane. And this is exactly what I felt when I was in the simulator. And again, we were not going to do anything tricky. You know, an engine wasn't going to blow. And it wasn't going to be bumpy. Because bumpy, for me, if you give me, as my son can tell you, as maybe McManus can tell you, if it's smooth, I'm fine. I can talk. I appear to be a real person. If it's bumpy, that's it.
And they can control all that, obviously, in the simulator.
That your definition of bumpy is not the definition most people have.
Right. Yeah, you don't mean turbulent. You mean bumpy.
Just slightly bumpy.
Yes. Tony's like, what's that?
But this simulator, they've got it smooth as silk. If they want it to be.
If they want it to be, yeah. Right. But that doesn't help real pilots.
You know,
that doesn't real pilots, you gotta test them.
But for this exercise, for you,
yes.
They said, okay, we'll make this.
But it is possible that in that circumstance, on that day, it would have been this smooth. And it was smooth in the takeoff and the landing and all of that. And what you see is so much different looking straight ahead than looking out the side on a window. It's just... It is. I don't want to say it's remarkably calming because that would be a lie.
But it
is
almost peaceful looking, probably.
Yes,
right?
It's different. Yeah. It's different, and this is why everybody who's ever talked to me about a fear of flying has said the same thing, which is you should learn how to fly. You should take flying lessons. And I go,
it sounds awfully real.
I don't know.
We've been saying that for years.
I don't want to do that.
These are not people who know you well.
I got an offer. I got an offer from the chief pilot, an American in this area. And this happened 2 weeks ago. The chief pilot at America, Keith, said to me, I have I have a World War II open cockpit two-seater plane. I'll sit in the back and fly it. You can get in the front and I'll let you handle the controls. I go, I don't know. Ooh. He said, we're not going to be up that high. I said, we're going to be off the ground at all? Because if we are, it doesn't really matter.
Are you going to be high enough to kill me if we fell?
Now, the thing that helps me most is if I can see land. I don't like seeing clouds under me. I like to see land because land in my mind thinks, well, we got a shot. Yeah, we're okay. We can see the land.
Maybe I'll bounce.
That's why I don't want to go to Europe.
If you could fly with the plane like 100 feet off the ground, you'd be okay with that, right? Like all the way
okay is a relative
still
term.
Still fatality issues that high.
You know, that's a relative term, and we never use the word fatality. It's like, I texted Tracy the other day. You know, I'm so close to flying. I'm so afraid of flying. And she writes back, then don't fly. And I text her back, don't ever say that to me.
Right.
I'm so close to this flight. Don't ever put that down in my mind. What are you, nuts? So it's
tough love.
It's possible I'm crazy.
When you got to Hawaii... You got to Hawaii, were there girls with grass skirts giving you?
No, we were on the. Oh, we were on the.
I thought maybe they let you.
No, they don't simulate everything.
They did the whole nine yards.
No. So, but I was so grateful, and I'm grateful to Delta. I'm grateful to Anthony Black.
You ought to do that more.
What, go in the simulator more?
Yeah. Because I bet the more you do it, the more accustomed you get to it.
I mean, did you feel anything getting out of it? Were you like, that was kind of nice, even? I mean, or was it?
Yes, but it didn't make me. I had to go up the next day, and it didn't. It didn't alleviate my anxieties.
You say it didn't, but like we
although
said,
on the way home,
you went on four in like a 9 day stretch.
Yeah,
there.
So on the way home, I only took half a pill.
Yeah,
half a pill. That was good.
Yeah. I have a hot.
And I did something I can't talk about, but it was a breakthrough for me. I just can't talk. I'll talk about it privately, but not publicly.
Right, cool. I have a hot air balloon.
Let's go to break then.
No. You should try that.
No hot air balloons. No. I think we're done. Yeah.
That's a cool story, though. Yeah, I'm surprised you were able to hold on to that.
I'm grateful. Here's the great luck in my life. I'm able to call people at airlines and say, look, I'm really terrified of this, and I could use some help. And because of the celebrity, they are more than willing to help, and it is deeply, deeply appreciated. Like, I don't like to sit at the gate. Like, Michael and I go together.
Well, it's not that you don't like to. It adds to your anxiety.
So, Michael, I always get, like, some private room, and Michael goes, I can't stand this, and he just leaves.
No, it's because I can't. If I sit still, it makes me dwell on the flight. I like to walk the concourse.
Yeah, and I need to sit still in a room and be terrified. But the people have been very, very nice at United, at American, at Delta, I'll name them all. Anthony Black at Delta and Jeannie Valentino at United and Kent Powell at American. They've been great. And McManus can tell you, I'm sorry. I need this.
You do.
I need this. I'm deeply appreciative, but I need this. We will take a break, come back with a jingle and some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Michael Dad remembers everything he says, like, don't buy horses and don't buy jets. Was there a third thing on that list? I forget. Oh, well, it probably wasn't that important. Now today I've got a major announcement. The socialite was bored. So me and Alan and Gary and Maury, we sunk all our money into some bar. You thought by now you'd have sent me to Florida, or I'd be wandering in front of an old bookstore. But instead I lost my common sense.
I see where this is going.
This is the end of the inheritance.
Jerry Negrelli, inspired by a suggestion from Andrew Weir, the great Bruce Hornsby song. It's very, very good.
Thanks, Jerry.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday for coming on. Today, I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Harry's Razors, Upside.com, and ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave a review.
And that's a good show, Tony. I don't know why you're down on the Friday show. I think it's a fun show.
Yeah, I do my best.
From Tom Martin, we have a lot of Luke emails. From Tom Martin, listening to Luke talking about his pen preferences, I wanted to share a picture of the pens I use for grading from the first floor of my undisclosed university. As you can see, they are red, very red, bleeding through the paper red. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage read me an article several years ago while we were traveling that said to not grade with a red pen because students would find that aggressive, hurt their feelings, and not be conducive to better performance in the future, and that professors should think about more appropriate colors like mauve. I pulled off at the next exit, found an Office Depot, and bought out their inventory of red pens. Mauve, what's next? Analytics for the NBA. Luke, for blue pens, I recommend Uniball Signal Bold 207. I have no idea what any of that means, but I love that pen. Oh, and eat it, Saliza. I just wanted to be part of the group. Love the show. From Benjamin Bruner, sports writer, Eastern Shore, Maryland. I wrote this email using a black ink pen. Ask Luke Russert next time you see him how that tastes. From Stephen Lewis, Luke Russert should chat with our friends at Calvert Woodley. 1984 was not a great vintage in Bordeaux. Uncle Ted would not be drinking this. These wines did not age like Orwell's seminal novel. Did he say that?
He said why is he courtside? If it were him, he'd be drinking the 94 Bordeaux 84. From the box. 84 Bordeaux. So.
Yeah, something like that.
So in other words, Luke said something he knew nothing about, but said it boldly, and loud,
confidently,
which is the way to go. Yeah. Timothy Weatherhead, Tim in D.C. Shout out to Luke Russert for narking on a sizable portion of the D.C. population. Cool, bro. Did you let the teacher know that punch tasted funny at your high school prom, too? What does that mean?
Narking is like ratting out.
Yeah,
a narc would be a narcotics officer.
Yeah, somebody that sort of... Yeah.
But I don't know what that was a reference to.
I don't know.
Yeah, smoking pot or something like that, or...
Probably has something to do with 420 from
yesterday. Yeah, yeah, maybe. Probably 420.
All right, Brian in Silver Spring, Brian Parsons.
Big stoner, Luke Russert.
Did I just hear Luke say that Fox and Bill O'Reilly were printing gold? Is that like the ceiling is the roof? Or these go to 11? By the way, I love Saliza, and my neighbor Mike has four cars parked in the street for two people living in his house. He's a jerk. And yes, this is from an AOL email address. You get what you pay for. This is such a random. It's such a great email.
More random than that.
From Raymond Hando in Flemington, New Jersey.
Hando.
I think that's on the way to Atlantic City, but I could be wrong. Now that the NFL schedule is out, will you spend a segment fretting about the Monday Night Football schedule? Yeah. You no longer have to travel.
This is a first.
I didn't do it. How concerned are you about the thought of going from New York to Arizona in back-to-back weeks? Well, New York is easy. Or Carolina to Seattle to Baltimore. Carolina's a drive. It's not hard. At least theoretically, you could have bunked with Levitard in Miami and Tampa Bay hosting back-to-back games in December. Think of all the December golfing you could have done. Yeah, if they're back-to-back in Tampa, you stay.
Flemington, New Jersey is on the way to Atlantic City, depending on where you're going there from.
From here?
Not from here. No, it's just northwest of Princeton, it looks like.
Oh,
east of Allentown.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. From Tony Beeson. From that Tony Beeson, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage, and I went shopping for carpet last night. I nearly fell asleep while standing up. All I heard was blah, 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 stain resistant, blah, 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 nylon twill, blah, blah, blah. But then the carpet guy said something that caught my attention. Quote, if you have a heavy object that we have to move like a piano, that will cost extra. My eyes lit up. My wife shot me a quick glance, but not before she could stop me. I yelled out, I have a piano. From Kate Beal. Good morning, Mr. Tony. I'm a longtime Lil from the wilds of Maine, i.e. north of Portland. I lived in Metro D.C. for about 10 years and thoroughly enjoyed being reminded daily of all things I loved about being there, many of them the very things that sent me packing to less hospitable climes, but I digress. I'm writing to let you know that I'm an old female Lil who doesn't even know where the Hallmark channel is on my remote thingy. ESPN, Bravo, Nesson, Go Sox, yes, Hallmark, no. Just felt the need to resist being profiled, la cheeserie. Sincerely, 65 and female Kate Beal, Holden, Maine.
Amen, cool.
Love
sister.
That. Love that. Mike Pavlik in Lower Burrell, Pennsylvania. I'm pretty sure Bill O'Reilly's next book is going to be called Killing the Goose That Laid the Golden Egg. Are we almost out?
We've still got a little time.
No.
Maybe about 5, 10 seconds.
That's not enough. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I have a piano.
She's a big girl. Well, she's a beacon.